This evening is Chris Pinto. And for those of you who don't know Chris, why, he is the gentleman who produced Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, and then the award-winning production, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, that Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, and this is an award-winning documentary, and I don't know how many actually documentaries competed for the for the prize there, or for the award from the New York Film Festival, but Chris's Secret Mysteries actually got the prize. So we were very, very pleased. It's going to be presented at the Tahoe Film Festival, and they must really like it because they're flying in a number of the people who appeared in the film at the Tahoe Film Festival's expense so that they can have a panel and discuss what's here. Well, obviously, Chris Pinto's Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning has created quite a firestorm because now the History Channel and several other people have made new documentaries dealing with the issue of Masonry and Masonry's influence on the United States. And, of course, the thing is that, of course, Chris goes into that extensively. We're going to be, of course, talking about that in just a minute or two. Well, Chris, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thanks again for having me, Dr. Stan. It's always great to be on the show with you.
All right, fine. Well, let's get somewhat in the background here. As far as what we know about the background of America's secret beginnings, so would you sort of like for our listeners out there who really don't know anything at all about this, I mean, all that most people know is that we had a Revolutionary War and America was founded, and following the Revolutionary War, we had a Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and to most people, that is the foundation of America, but there's far more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. You know, we when we were putting this whole thing together, we began with a question that I think is a pretty logical question. One of the hot debates right now, you even see it in popular media, especially if you watch Fox News, is the whole concept of America's foundation. What was the purpose of America? Was America founded as a Christian nation? Was it founded as a secular nation or a humanist nation? What was, you know, what was behind the founders' intent in writing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and so on? So we ask the question in Secret Mysteries, if America was founded as a Christian nation only, and that were its only intent, then why are so many of our icons and national symbols not at all Christian, but why do they come from the pagan ancient mystery religions? Why is the Washington Monument in the form of an Egyptian obelisk that once glorified the sun god Ra? Why is the Statue of Liberty in the form of the Babylonian mother goddess, a figure from the ancient world? Why do we have the all-seeing eye of the Egyptian god Horus floating over a pyramid on the back of the U.S. dollar bill? These are not Christian symbols. We don't have any icons of Jesus and the apostles and things like this that represent our national heritage. So where do these things come from? And what we do in Secret Mysteries is we backtrack to just before the founding of America, during the Elizabethan era in England, and we talk about a guy named Sir Francis Bacon and a cohort of his, a man named Dr. John Dee, and their plan, really, it was probably more Bacon's plan, ultimately, than anyone else's, to bring about this colonization scheme. In fact, we show, among other things, a Newfoundland stamp from the early part of the 20th century that has a picture of Francis Bacon on it, and the stamp reads, Lord Bacon, the guiding spirit in a colonization scheme.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Chris Pinto. But you really can't understand so many things going on today unless you understand the history you're going to learn this evening. Well, go ahead with the story there, Chris.
Well, we're talking about Bacon and his influence in the colonization scheme, and how there was a group during that Elizabethan era in the late 1500s, early 1600s, right before the Jamestown colony was founded, that was known as the Baconian Circle. And they're called the Baconian Circle today because they were it was a group of nobles, of literary minds, of writers and artists and so on, who were a part of Queen Elizabeth's court and on the periphery of that court, men like Sir Walter Raleigh, who came to America initially and founded what we today call the Lost Colony at Roanoke. And we talk a little bit about that. And Raleigh's real intent for coming to America, why did he come? Was it really to found a colony, or was it to find the 77th meridian? Because that was believed to be very, very important to capture that position geographically for the New World. And so we talk about, we quote author Duncan Steele in his book, Marking Time, how he reveals in this book that this was the real reason for Raleigh's expedition. And, of course, history tells us that Raleigh was very much a part of what Sir Francis Bacon and his group were up to, and that they were the ones, Bacon was the one, who was engineering this whole scheme to come to the New World for the purpose of founding what Bacon believed would be a new Atlantis. In fact, he wrote a book to that effect. When the continent of America was discovered, there were a number of people like Sir Francis Bacon and John Dee who believed that America was the lost continent of Atlantis, and that they had found Atlantis of old that had, you know, been destroyed by a great flood of water, and that this ancient civilization, that this would be the site of a new Atlantis, a new empire that would go forward and lead man into this golden era and would change the world. And that's exactly what Bacon was trying to achieve, to establish what would be a democratic commonwealth, a philosophic empire that would eventually spread to the whole world. That was his plan. And so we give a lot of the details of that plan. We show this plan and the unfolding of it through Masonic writers, namely Manly P. Hall, who has his book, The Secret Destiny of America, where he writes about, you know, that this is really not just a plan that began with Sir Francis Bacon, but that this was an ancient plan of secret societies.
And you hold that thought, and we're going to be back here in just a moment with Chris Pinto and the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris is talking about this ancient plan that was in place long before America was ever created. But really, of course, he starts the story in Elizabethan England with a man named Sir Francis Bacon. And Sir Francis Bacon was certainly part of the court of Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth, and he believed that America would become the new Atlantis. It would become the fulfillment of that ancient quest of ancient Atlantis, this wonderful society that was actually destroyed many eons before. Whether it ever existed, we don't know, but Plato wrote about it in his dialogues, and so those people who have embraced occult beliefs in the ancient mystery religions, as taught by Plato and Plutarch and Pythagoras, Bacon was an intellectual, surrounded by intellectuals, and they dreamed that America would become the New Atlantis. In fact, Sir Francis Bacon wrote a book entitled The New Atlantis, and I think he died in the 1820s, but his followers came to the United States and working through secret societies here, began working towards the time when America would become a great empire and bring the whole world into this new order of the ages that they believed in. Go ahead.
So this is what this is the side of America's founding that we show. And this plan seems to have been in place even before the Pilgrims got to the New World. Now, the interesting thing is, from what I've read on the Pilgrims were initially planning to land somewhere near the Jamestown colony. And we believe, and we share this in the documentary, that the Pilgrims were Christians, that they were Bible-believing Christians. If you read William Bradford's book on the history of the Plymouth colony, it's very, very clear. Bradford was a Christian man, and you know, he was the chief governor of the Plymouth colony for many years, I think more than 30 years. And Bradford clearly governed the colony based upon biblical principles, based upon his faith in God and in the Lord Jesus Christ. He's very forward about that in his writings. But the Pilgrims had been blown off course, and so they landed farther north at Plymouth. and they began their colony there. And the Plymouth colony, I think, was a whole other program from the Jamestown colony. And initially, the Jamestown colony, from what I've read on it, was a disaster, and it failed miserably, or began to fail miserably. But the Plymouth colony, once they established private property ownership, that colony began to flourish. And that's really what got people excited about coming to America, and seeing this as the land of opportunity, a land where anybody could come, they could have their own piece of the pie, as it were, and if they worked hard, they were willing to work, they could prosper and move forward and so on, and that's how America really took off. And I think this is where a lot of the initial conflict that we're seeing today, several hundred years later, I think this is where a lot of that conflict began. And you see there's, you know, you very definitely had biblical Christians who came to this country, and they believed the gospel. And they were trying to build a society. I don't think they were really thinking in terms of building an empire, as it were. They just wanted their towns and their villages and their cities to be based upon Christian teachings and so on. Well, but at the same time, you had these secret societies that were being sent by Bacon and by his followers, those who continued in his tradition even after he died in 1626, the Rosicrucians chiefly, and also the Freemasons afterward. And we talk a good bit in this documentary about the Rosicrucians. And part of the reason why I wanted to spend time on this is because, as you know, Dr. Stan, Rosicrucianism is something that is largely unknown by most people in America. And they don't realize the great impact that Rosicrucianism had both on the founding of America and its influence on what we today know as Freemasonry. But according to the research that we've done and that we present in Secret Mysteries, it would seem that that modern Freemasonry really grew out of the early Rosicrucian movement. Dr. John Dee and Sir Francis Bacon were both Rosicrucians initially. And the whole idea of the Rosicrucian, of course, their chief symbol is the symbol of the rose and the cross. And in short, what it symbolizes is combining the elements of Christianity, the cross, and then the rose, which represents the Eastern mystical belief system, the Eastern mysteries. And so it's this combining of paganism and Christianity. And that is, in a nutshell, that is Rosicrucianism. And so Rosicrucians believe in Christ, and they believe in Jesus Christ, or their version of Jesus Christ. But at the same time, they believe that it's okay to engage in magic. It's okay to summon spirits, whether good or evil spirits, to gain knowledge and insight into, you know, magical things and things that will further knowledge and science and so on. And so this is very much what Rosicrucianism is about. It's very much what Sir Francis Bacon and Dr. John Dee were about.
Well, I think the significant thing really is to go back and throughout history, and there has always been people who belong to secret societies who wanted to tap into the mysteries, who wanted power, and felt that they could obtain power by tapping into the other dimension. And, of course, in the Bible we're told we should certainly avoid astrologer and fortune tellers and mediums and diviners and these people who are manifestations of the other dimension. Certainly we see this portrayed on Monday evenings. I don't know if it'll be back in the fall, but I suspect it will. The story of the medium. A woman, Alison Dubois, who is a very attractive blonde mother with three beautiful blonde daughters, but she has the ability to sense things. She gets these dreams, and she's able then to help the district attorney catch the bad guys. Really what's significant about this is that there really is an Alison Dubois who really did, of course, work with the district attorney to catch the bad guys, and she did have mystical abilities, and there are certain people who can actually contact this other dimension. Well, this has always been the desire of people who wanted power. Contact the other dimension, of course, you can get great power on your own, but of course, you're dabbling things that we were never intended to be dabbled into, and the Bible specifically warns us to avoid astrology and mediums and fortune tellers and diviners and seers, and all of these things are specifically listed in both the Old and the New Testament. Avoid them, and yet there's always been men intrigued by them. If we could only tap into that, we could have great power. And we could bring about this wonderful new order of the ages, as it were.
Yeah, and the thing that's really fascinating about studying the early Rosicrucian movement, and just like you're talking about how they were practicing various forms of mediumship. In fact, Dr. John Dee worked with a medium named Edward Kelly, and the interesting pattern that you find with mediums that demonstrates why I think God is condemning throughout the Bible, throughout the Old and New Testament, condemning this communing with spirits of the dead, these spirits that peep and mutter, as God says in Isaiah. You know, why do you seek for the living? Why do you seek the dead? You know, should not a people seek their God? God says. But what they want, like you said, is they want power. They want knowledge. And it's incredible that these men, you know, Dee and Bacon both, were given a tremendous amount of knowledge, scientific knowledge and insight and so on. And we talk about some of the things that they developed. But this is a pattern that we see through the 19th and 20th century as well, when you have the great inventors like Thomas Edison, who was part of the House of Theosophy, the Theosophical Society, and was deeply involved in the occult. And believed, you know, or claimed that he was getting some of his ideas for inventions and so on from the spirit realm.
And I think most people really don't understand that Theosophy was a secret society that was created by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who is a female Mason. She organized this somewhere about 1875. And here Thomas Edison and Arthur Conan Doyle and many of the leaders of the 19th century were part and parcel of her organization. In the 20th century, she attracted people like Margaret Sanger, who formed Planned Parenthood, and Adolf Hitler. In fact, that's where I believe Adolf Hitler got the supernatural power that allowed him to unite Germany and allowed him simply to hold crowds for 3 or 4 or 5 hours at a time, gave him the ability to control other men, and of course to wreak such havoc on Germany and the world.
Definitely. I mean, people, you know, that Hitler is one of the examples that I like to use with people when they think that these movements like the Theosophical Society and others are unimportant or insignificant or they're, you know, below ground, and how does that really affect me? Hitler, as we know, kept a copy of Madame Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine, at his bedside. And it's said by some that he used to read it on a nightly or a regular basis. And, of course, his whole concept of the Aryan race, you know, the Aryan Superman, comes from this secret doctrine. And this secret doctrine dates all the way back, interestingly enough, to ancient Atlantis. And so you find these links. You know, Bacon's writing about the new Atlantis and resurrecting this ancient empire, and then you find all of these spiritists and occultists and so on writing about the secret doctrine, going back to Atlantis, and it leads to a guy like Hitler, who buys into all of this stuff and ends up mass murdering people in the early to mid part of the 20th century. So it's very definitely something, these doctrines, that do affect our lives, whether we believe in them or we don't. A lot of people think, well, I don't believe that way, so it's not going to affect me. But it impacted all of Europe during World War II, and it has continued to impact the world from that time forward. Because many of the beliefs that Hitler held are likewise held by all of these secret societies that are moving forward toward a global government.
And this new order of the ages, which has always been there, that is really one of the driving forces behind this whole movement. They want to create a new order of the ages. And, well, we'll talk more about that a little bit later here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Chris Pinto, and one of our listeners had called in and asked, was Atlantis an actual city or just a metaphor used by Plato?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It's one that people continue to ask and have been asking for centuries now. Plato, if you read Plato's dialogue in the Critias, Plato asserts through his characters who are carrying on this dialogue, and they're historical characters that he's writing about. He asserts over and over again that this story of Atlantis is not an allegory or a fiction, but that it is, in fact, the real telling of a story. And it was supposedly a story that was handed down by the Greek lawgiver Solon. And Solon had supposedly journeyed to Egypt, and he had been given this story by the Egyptian priests, centuries ago. And Solon handed it down and handed it down, and then it ultimately comes down to Critias, who's telling the story in Plato's dialogue. And it's interesting because the story cuts off midway and then goes on from there. I tend to agree with teachers like Dr. Kent Hovind, that Atlantis is most likely a picture, whether there was a literal Atlantis or not. It was a picture of the antediluvian world, the pre-flood world, and the wicked society that's written about in the Bible that God destroyed because they were so corrupt. And the destruction of Atlantis by water is probably one of the many versions of the flood stories. And there are hundreds of different flood stories around the world of how the ancient world was destroyed by a great flood because of the wrath of God or the gods, depending upon which story you read. And many Christians believe that that is what Atlantis represents, that ancient society. So it becomes very interesting when you get into the New Testament and Jesus talks about the last days, and he says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be at the coming of the Son of Man. And if Atlantis is a picture of the society that existed in the days of Noah, and now we have these secret orders that are trying to rebuild that society, to rebuild and come up with this new Atlantis, this worldwide utopian empire, which we believe prophetically is going to be the kingdom of Antichrist, it becomes a very interesting picture. And all of the parts of the puzzle seem to fit together in terms of what the secret societies are trying to accomplish. You can read accounts of ancient Atlantis where Atlantis was ruled by 10 kings, okay, the philosopher kings. And then you go to the book of Revelation and you read about the 10 kings that will be ruling the world, and those 10 kings give their power to the beast, Antichrist, and he becomes the one world ruler. So there's a lot of really, really fascinating parallels between the New Age prophecies concerning Atlantis, concerning world government, concerning ultimately a world leader that they're calling the Maitreya, the world teacher, and so on. And then what we have in biblical prophecy in the book of Daniel, in Zechariah, and of course the book of Revelation, and throughout the books of the Old and New Testament, that parallel these things and that warn us that no, this is not going to be a kingdom of light. It's going to seem that way, but in reality it will be a kingdom of darkness. And a kingdom that is, that is aimed against the Lord and against His Christ.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Chris Pinto. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just discussing this idea of Atlantis. Was Atlantis, lost Atlantis, a real area? Was it a real region? Was it a metaphor? And of course, many, many people believe it existed. It was the antediluvian world, in other words, the world that existed at the time of Noah before the flood. And as Chris has pointed out, we're told in Matthew that when Jesus Christ describes how it will be when he returns, as it was in the days of Noah. As it was in the days of Noah. And of course, what these secret societies are doing, and they're not one, but a number of secret societies working within our society today, at least, if you don't know about them, why, they're for all intents and purposes. And their goal has always been to make here in the United States this new Atlantis that was to spread their influence throughout the world. And as America moves to dominate the world and to bring all of the world into this new order of the ages, this so-called world democracy that the president keeps talking about, and if you read, of course, the writings of Manly P. Hall, he will tell you that there have been secret societies that have been working for 3,000 years to bring about a system of world democracies throughout the world. And that is exactly what American foreign policy is ostensibly trying to do today. And the president will tell you, if you read his speeches, we are going to bring democracy to the world. So pick up the story there, Chris.
Well, you know, something I wanted to add to answering that question about whether or not Atlantis was real or not. There are people who are a part of secret societies and who buy into New Age philosophy and theology and so on, who still believe to this day that America is literally the physical site of ancient Atlantis. In fact, I'm not going to reveal who they are, but two people that we've interviewed, that I have interviewed for Volume 2 in our Secret Mystery series, which we're working on right now, two of the people who are a part of that esoteric community shared with us on camera that they believe that is the case, that America is the site of ancient Atlantis. And these people believe, they really, really believe, not just Manly P. Hall. We quote Hall, and Dr. Stan is quoting Hall, but this is something that is believed throughout the New Age movement, that America has this hidden secret destiny, this esoteric destiny to lead mankind into this, you know, philosophic commonwealth of all nations. And that just as the 50 independent states were sewn together into the United States of America, that that's a picture, that's a prototype, according to New Agers, of what's going to happen to the world. And that at some point, all the nations of the earth will be gathered together, just like all the states in America were gathered together. And they will be united in a single world government. There's already been talk. The way that they, one of the ways that they accomplished this, if you study the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment is traditionally known as the amendment that gave citizenship to the slaves. Okay, well, the way that they gave citizenship to the slaves was they swapped the citizenship of Americans. In other words, it used to be in America, you were born into your state, and you were, let's say you were born in the state of Alabama. You would be a citizen of the state of Alabama first, and then you would be a citizen of the United States second. Okay? Well, then with the 14th Amendment, they flipped that. So you were a citizen of the United States first, the federal government, and then you were a citizen of your individual state, say Alabama or someplace, second. And there are some people who believe that this is what they're going to try and do eventually with the United Nations. That just like we're citizens of America first, and then we're considered UN citizens or part of the United Nations second, at some point they'll look to flip that around and make you a UN citizen, a world citizen first, and then your allegiance to your nation state will be secondary. And so that's just sort of an interesting dynamic to see that has happened in the past and that may well come to pass in the future, and it definitely fits in with what the New Agers believe will come to pass. And well, this is what they're teaching.
And I think it's so interesting, in your first film, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, you take a quotation from George Bush, and he basically says, and of course you have to understand esoteric writing, you have a statement, and then to begin a sentence, and then you put in a lot of incidental things to confuse people, so they cannot remember what you started the sentence with, and then the final concluding remarks. And of course, this wonderful statement, you quote him, you know, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. Well, what is the new order of the ages? If you type it in Google, it comes back the Novus Ordo Seclorum, the slogan that you'll find on the dollar bill there. And I think it's so important that people understand that there is a ancient plan. It is being fulfilled today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Chris Pinto. You picked the story up there, Chris.
Yeah, that quote from President Bush, just so people know, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but we actually took that from Bush's 2005 inaugural address when he was reelected. And it's very, very interesting. most people who are listening probably know that Bush Sr., the first George Bush, mentioned the New World Order many, many times during his administration. And there are many quotes from Bush on the New World Order. When Bush Jr., George W., was elected president, for the first 4 years, I could not find a single New World Order quote specifically from President Bush. In fact, I even called a number of people when we were working on an earlier documentary, Megiddo, and I was putting together quotes on this, and there were no quotes from President Bush specifically. Nobody had any. Well, then after he was reelected, and he was he's now in his at the very beginning of his second term, and he makes this speech, he doesn't use the phrase New World Order, but he does come out and finally makes use of that phrase, the New Order of the Ages. And it's very interesting what he says. When he says, you know, our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And he's saying this in such a way that he's leading the audience to believe that he has every intention of fulfilling this ancient hope. So the question then becomes, all right, what is the ancient hope that he's referring to? And, of course, none of the news media picked up on this, or if they did, they didn't bother to report it or to point it out or, you know, to ask any pertinent questions that they ought to have asked, I think. You know, what ancient hope is he talking about? How ancient is this hope? And part of what we try to explain in Secret Mysteries is the ancient hope that President Bush is referring to. And so we go back in time and we show, in fact, that this dream for America and what America would mean to the world. I mean, we found quotes where, you know, when Columbus stumbled upon the New World, and some people say he rediscovered it. There are quotes among in the court in Spain where they're calling this, you know, the great secret that has been hidden, you know, from the founding of the world or whatever. I mean, really dramatic statements about discovering America and what this would mean to mankind. And it seems pretty clear that in the ancient world, there was a knowledge of this place and there was a belief that amazing things were going to happen from this continent once it was rediscovered and colonized, and people came here and began to build.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Pinto is our guest. We're simply talking about a phrase that President Bush had used towards the end of his second inaugural speech. That would be in January of 2005. What he talked about when our founders declared a new order of the ages. And then, of course, a lot of verbiage in there to confuse you, but that concluded they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. Well, what was the ancient hope that our founders were acting on? I mean, our founders, he's talking about the men who created the United States. But they were acting on an ancient hope. And, of course, what he was really talking about was the influence of the mystery religions and the secret societies at the time America was founded. But nobody, of course, has ever really commented on that. A few people have picked up on it. But the average person doesn't understand there really are secret societies. There really is an ancient hope. And, of course, if you Google in the phrase ancient new order of the ages on your computer, new order of the ages, what comes up on the Google? Why, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, the phrase that you will find beneath the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the on this whole the whole concept of the ancient hope, one of the more fascinating things that I stumbled across in the research was this book by Harvard professor Barry Fell called America BC, where Fell is, you know, highly respected for his research into ancient America. I mean, literally America before the time of Christ and the apostles. And he documents in his book all of these ancient artifacts from Europe, from places like Carthage and Rome and Egypt and so on, that are found up and down the eastern seaboard, you know, in places like Vermont and New Hampshire and so on, where it's very evident that there were travelers from Europe that came to the American continent from the ancient world. That this and they have temples that they built. We show how they uncovered the all-seeing eye of Bel or Baal, okay? And they even call it the Eye of Bel. And they had all of these phallic stones that they had carved out that all come from the ancient world and so on, and that people knew. People knew about the American continent. They knew that this place was here. And somehow or other, they didn't publish this openly to all. And it makes you wonder, I mean, you can't help but look at the writings of a guy like Manly P. Hall and others who talk about how this concept of America was kept secret within the secret orders. They didn't want everybody to know about it because they didn't want the land to be developed until, quote, the time is right, as it were. And so they believed there was some appointed time for people to come here and to launch this new empire. And so there is a tremendous amount of evidence that America has been part of an ancient plan, an ancient hope, as President Bush says. And it makes you really, really think, who could write a line of dialogue like that?
Well, I don't think that George Bush did. I think that his speechwriter wrote it. But I think there are people who surround George Bush who really understand the significance of the ancient mysteries. But I don't think George Bush really has any glimpse at all of what it's all about. He's a script reader, and he of course, reads the scripts for the people who are really directing the course of our nation today. As we move from war to war and an expanded war in the Middle East with what I believe are going to be frightening consequences for America, but you can't understand what's going on in the Middle East today unless you understand these ancient secret societies that I think have been intent upon plunging us into this coming conflict for many, many centuries.
Well, on President Bush, I don't know. It makes you wonder. I mean, either he's done a lot of research or somebody who's writing for him knows an awful lot about these things. That, to me, has always seemed like a very, very piercing and insightful quote that he spoke on.
Well, you know, I think that, Chris, there's always been a small group of very intelligent intellectual people. I mean, going back to the time ancient Persia and the ancient Magi, and certainly these secrets were known to the ancient Egyptians and the Babylonians and the Druids and the Assyrians. There have always been the priests, the people who were delving into this other dimension. And certainly we see a lot of this codified in the Kabbalah. We find it certainly picked up by the Gnostics, the Christian mystics, in the first and second century. And then we find it, of course, being picked up by the Templars. We find it being picked up then by the Rosicrucians, and then certainly by the Masons and the Illuminati. And if you read Albert Pike, who was really the father of contemporary Scottish Rite Masonry, he talks about the influence of these concepts even on the Illuminati here and throughout the world. So there have always been these groups, but they've always been working within the shadows because they didn't want the public to know, and certainly Plato and Plutarch and Pythagoras were all part of this movement.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly believe you're right on that, Dr. Stan. There's a lot of evidence. One of the things that Hall does in his book on America's Secret Destiny is chronicle throughout history all of the plans for a utopian empire and how this concept of, you know, a global commonwealth of nations that would somehow or other be paradise on earth has been the thought of a great many thinkers. Very interesting. One of the people that we interview is the guy who's considered the foremost expert in the world right now on Sir Francis Bacon, a man named Peter Dawkins, who is the head of the founder and president of the Francis Bacon Research Trust in England. And he writes, he's got like 14 or 15 different books on Francis Bacon and all of his life and works and so on. But one of the titles of his books is Building Paradise. And he writes about this the whole purpose for Bacon, the whole purpose for Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry and the secret orders is to literally recover mankind from the fall that is suffered in the Garden of Eden. But this recovery does not come by trusting God and His Son Jesus Christ and being reconciled through Christ's atonement on the cross. This recovery comes from man himself. Man through knowledge gains knowledge and ascends into a higher state and builds paradise on earth himself. And according to Dawkins' philosophy, man was in paradise, he lost paradise, and now to regain it, he needs to earn it. And so we see this picture that's very, very consistent throughout Masonry and all the mystery religions, this picture of works-oriented righteousness, the idea that men, by their own hard labor, can make themselves gods and create their own paradise. And this, of course, is something that we know as Christians is an affront to God. You know, God says, you know, it's simply not possible for man to do this. Why? Because all have sinned and come short of God's glory. And so Jesus says, without me, you can do nothing. So we as Christians understand that our reliance must be upon the Lord Jesus Christ. But those who are part of the esoteric community, they shun that reliance and they teach self-reliance. They teach reliance upon themselves. And that it's all up to us. We have to build paradise. We have to fix all these problems. We can't look for some outside force, God or Jesus or anyone else to do it. It's all up to us. And that's the backbone of this theology and this philosophy. And we can see all around us, I mean, with all these self-help books and self-help programs and self-empowerment seminars that are going on, and just the teaching of the world today, that's very much the direction that the world is moving in. And it's very troubling to consider just how anti-Christ that position really is. Even though it sounds like a very good idea when you're hearing it, you know, if you're sitting in a classroom and somebody's talking to you about, you know, personal responsibility and so on, you don't necessarily disagree with them at that level. I mean, we agree that we have to be personally responsible for our actions, but in terms of being able to reconcile ourselves from our fallen state, that's something that we simply don't have the power to do. It's not within ourselves to do it. Why? Because we are corrupt. We are fallen in nature. And we did not make ourselves to begin with, so we cannot remake ourselves or rebirth ourselves, as it were. The Bible says, the Lord, He has made us, and not we ourselves.
And, of course, when you get into Masonry, the whole idea is that you're going to be able to do this on your own. The Mason said, we are an organization that's to make good men better. And, of course, through works, we're going to be able to improve ourselves and actually almost to become like gods ourselves. And this is the thing. But this is only, of course, really known to the people, a very, very small number of the people within Masonry. Most Masons have no idea what the real secret of Masonry is. And, of course, the promise that they will be the one who will rule the rulers of the world. And the power is there if you can find the secret, but they never quite tell you what the secret is.
Yeah, the troubling thing about Masonry, you know, we're going to talk in our volume 2. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about Masonry. And one of the people that we've interviewed for volume 2 is Ed Decker. And I know you know Ed Decker, Dr. Stan. Ed is just great, and he's got a lot of great knowledge on Freemasonry. He comes from a long line of Masons, like 200 years back, and his father was a Mason. And he says that his father's great ambition for his death, and thankfully his dad got saved before he died, but before he got saved, his great ambition was to be buried wearing his lambskin apron that he had as a Mason. All Masons have these aprons that they wear. And the apron is a picture of the fig leaves that Adam and Eve sewed together and covered themselves with to hide their shame, to hide their sin, okay, in the Garden of Eden. And, of course, you know, that's a picture of self-righteousness, man trying to cover his own sin, man trying to atone for or to account for, to make up for his own sin. And, of course, God made an animal sacrifice, and then He covered Adam and Eve. He covered them you know, with the death of an animal, it was a picture, probably a lambskin, but it was a picture of the sacrifice of Christ that would come. And but now Masons, now they reject that atonement. They reject the atonement of Christ, and in its place, they rely upon this apron as their covering before God. And one of the things I know you've talked about, Dr. Stan, in the past, but Ed Decker talked about it a lot when I met with him, is that Masons are looking forward to, when they die, to stand before the great white throne judgment. And there they'll be standing with their lambskin apron on, which is their covering before God, and they believe that by being a good Mason or a good citizen or, you know, a good person, that they will have earned their right to get into heaven.
But, of course, they have not done their the Bible study, because if you read the book of Revelation, the great white throne of judgment is not what, where you want to go. That's for certain. In fact, any Mason you know, ask them if they plan to stand before the great white throne of judgment and then refer them to the book of Revelation, or the revelation of Jesus Christ at the end of the Bible. What is the great white throne?
It's the judgment of the damned.
The judgment of the damned, that's right.
Now, those who are cast in the lake of fire, because their names are not found written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And that's the, that's just a, it, you know, it's just like Satan has got these guys so deceived. He's got it all set up, you know, in their symbolism and their ceremonies and everything. And it's just a terrible thing when these men, especially when they're Christian men, and there's so many Masons who are involved in churches across America. The church that I was going to probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, was infiltrated with a number of Masons, and I didn't realize it at the time. I just started studying about Masonry, and then I came to discover, you know, these elders and these deacons, and they're wearing these Masonic rings and everything, and I started confronting some of them and found out there was even more and more of them. And then there were a lot of Masonic connections in that church. And ultimately they rejected my counsel, and so I ended up leaving the church in time. But it's a very serious problem. I mean, when I spoke with Ed Decker, when I spoke with William Still a number of years ago, Still comes from a Masonic background with his family, and he talks about interviewing a pastor of a small church who had once been a Mason, got out of Masonry, and then his career as a pastor in Baptist churches just torpedoed and went down. And he interviewed this pastor, and the pastor said he believed that about 70% of the leadership in major denominational churches, Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, and so on, was infiltrated, whether it's the pastors, the elders, the deacons, and so on, with Freemasons, who specifically seek those positions of power so that they can be influential in the churches.
And that's why the churches will not speak out and tell the parishioners the truth about Masonry.
Yeah, I had a woman even, on this note again, not to go on and on about it, I had a woman call me probably 8, 9 months ago, had seen Megiddo 1, where we talk about Masonry there, and was describing how the pastor at her church was a Freemason and how he was getting all of his Masonic, you know, brothers to come and join this church, and they were, you know, they were talking about their plans for bringing more and more Masons into the church and more churches and so on. And, you know, this is like this is like a militant movement for them. And it seems that they're, you know, some people believe that that the aim of Masonry is to destroy Christianity. And it seems that the way that they're looking to destroy Christianity is from within, and by diminishing the person and the representation of Jesus Christ. Because in a Masonic lodge, Jesus is deemed to be no better than Buddha or Krishna or Muhammad or Zoroaster or any of the great, you know, leaders of the pagan religions and so on, and Jesus is just one among many. And in this way, they diminish and diffuse the gospel message. And while a lot of them might not be doing that outwardly in the churches, I know some of them are. I know that at the church that I was going to a number of years ago, that's very much what the message was. That's the direction the message was going in. It was going in this ecumenical, universalist view. And I actually got out of that church right after September the 11th, because when that great tragedy happened, their answer to that was to start all of these interfaith prayer groups with different religions and embracing them all and, you know, praying and crying out to God, supposedly. And I thought, wow, this is going down the road to paganism. And so my wife and I got out of there.
Well, I really fear that many of our churches are turning away from the message of the gospel, that we're sinners and we need a Savior, to God loves everybody, you got nothing to worry about, there's no hell, no judgment, and no damnation. Well, Chris, we've got 3 minutes more in this segment of the program for you to wrap this part of it up, then we'll go to our break, and then we'll go to the next hour. But, you know, we certainly covered a lot. Somebody had called and asked if Francis Bacon was involved in the lost colony of Roanoke. Do you know anything about that?
You know, we talked a little bit about it before. What I believe Bacon's influence at Roanoke was, I believe it was Bacon and his group that sent Sir Walter Raleigh to not so much to found the lost colony, although that may have been part of it, but according to Duncan Steele in his book, Marking Time, Steele believes that Raleigh was sent to the New World really to capture the 77th meridian. And this is something that we talk about in Secret Mysteries. It's believed the 77th meridian was called God's meridian, that it was a sacred meridian, and that it would, all of this, of course, is esoteric wisdom, but that by having a colony or capturing that meridian, that it would bring good luck, as it were, to the rest of this mighty empire that was supposed to be established.
And you wonder why intelligent men would believe in good luck, but you see, they believe that they could tap into this other dimension that'd be tremendous power and advantage for them. Why would intelligent people do that? Because the power is real, but of course you access it at the risk of your eternal soul.
That's exactly right. And in fact, on that note, on that 77th meridian, we also show in Secret Mysteries how not only was Washington, D.C. Built on this 77th meridian, but Washington, D.C. was built in alignment with the first five revolutionary, or the early five great Revolutionary War cities, and that's Boston, New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. are all built in perfect alignment on the eastern seaboard. And we show how those five cities are built in alignment with Stonehenge over in England. And I believe that's a reflection not only of what Raleigh was trying to accomplish, but it's sort of a connection back to England and the esoteric movement that inspired the Masons and the Rosicrucians to come here to begin with.
And, of course, there really are these forces out here that most people have no idea exist. And, of course, Chris is doing a wonderful job to introduce you to this whole other dimension. Not that you should ever try to access it yourself, because you should not. But you need to know it's there, and you need to understand that these people believe in the Bible, except they have an entirely different interpretation because they worship a different God. And I think one of the big things that you need to understand is there are other gods here, and these people worship the other God. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon you to help us. If you believe that we have a unique message you're not going to hear other places, if you believe that we're really involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, if you believe that there is another dimension, that there really are people who worship a different God, and that these people many times have tremendous wealth and tremendous power and have accessed the other dimension, but of course at the loss of the danger of their eternal souls, if you would like to become part of our effort to educate the American people, to bring as many people as we can into the kingdom in the time that's allotted to us, because that's really what the real purpose behind everything we do. We're not going to solve this thing by political activity, although we should be involved politically, but we have to understand the spiritual nature, and we're called to bring as many people into the kingdom as we can, and wait and see how God moves at this time. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family. Or you can subscribe to our newsletter. If you'd like, just get a free copy of the newsletter. Let me suggest the May newsletter, which will describe the immigration crisis that we face from a spiritual point of view. Who is behind the immigration movement and what their secret logo is and how it fits into everything we're talking about tonight? That's the May Radio Liberty newsletter. If you'd like a free copy, my telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. I hope many of you, of course, will want to get Chris's excellent DVD. We carry it. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and I have a little tiny part in it, very insignificant. But, at least the one point I try to bring out is that at the time America was created, there were two forces. One was Christian. The other was a cult. And both of those forces are at work today. The only thing is that Christianity is being totally eclipsed by the occult forces who are using the military and financial power of our nation to bring about the new order of the ages. Well, we, of course, hope you'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. I hope you'll want to get the videos that were put out by Chris Pinto's minister. That's Pastor Joe Schimmel. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You need to get them. You need to watch them. They will literally change your life. In fact, my secretary told me just today that her son had showed that they sold their souls to rock and roll to one of his friends who comes from an occult family. Her mother is into all sorts of mysticism. And the boy had actually given his life to our Lord after seeing this video. It's a powerful, powerful video. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Certainly Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2 that Chris had put out, and Pastor Schimmel's latest DVD, The Da Vinci Con. Now, what this is simply explaining what's going on in Hollywood, the Gnostic influence, and most people don't even know what Gnosticism is, but they don't understand that many of the scriptwriters in Hollywood have actually been in contact with demonic spirits who are writing the scripts of the movies that are being popularized on the large screens across America today. The video, it's almost 3 hours. It's actually in DVD form. The Da Vinci Con, I will tell you, it is an amazing, amazing film, and you'll learn so much from this. I know I did, and remember, I've been at this for 44 years, and I thought I knew most of the things, but there's hardly a day goes by when I don't learn something new about this spiritual battle in which we're engaged. So if you'd like to get these things we're talking about, certainly my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, Secret Mysteries, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, The Da Vinci Con, and these other things we've been talking about, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. We ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle and we need your prayers. And we'll be back in just a moment for the second hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please don't put your calls in. Right now we have with us Chris Pinto, and Chris has put out a wonderful DVD and video. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and it won the New York Film Festival Award for Documentaries. Is that correct, Chris?
It won the Best Documentary Feature.
How many were actually submitted there? Do you have any idea?
I think they submit, I think about 1,700 projects, 1,700 different films that are submitted, and then they accept. In New York, it's about 200.
Well, I think that's really a great tribute to you, and you put your whole heart and soul into that, didn't you?
Yeah, well, definitely a lot of work, a lot of long hours, and a lot of research went into it. You know, it's almost 3 hours. We thought it was going to be about a little over 2 hours, and it ended up going a bit longer than I had thought. But praise the Lord, it seems to be doing pretty well, and just really excited about getting a witnessing tool into the hands of Christians that give them a different avenue to reach out to people and open a door to witness to them.
Now, my understanding is that the Tahoe Film Festival is going to be featuring this as well. In fact, you had even asked me if I would be able to go, they were going to pay my way to go there. You weren't putting the money up, were you?
No, actually, the Tahoe Reno International Film Festival, really excited about this project. They saw it. They, you know, a lot of the information, because we're describing this conflict between Christianity and the occult, the esoteric community, and these secret societies, which is a pretty popular subject right now. But this conflict, because we've got, you know, a lot of Christian speakers. We have Ian Taylor, William Schneblin. We've got you, Dr. Stan. And then we have a number of teachers from the esoteric community from the other side to hear from them firsthand what their teachings are and what they believe and so on. And so it's a project that has been, you know, pretty intriguing for those guys, and they were so excited about it they wanted to get some of our speakers. They agreed to fly them out, you know, pay their airfare, put them up in a hotel, and then have like a discussion panel. And so what they're doing is they're showing Secret Mysteries two nights, the first half on a Thursday, the 24th of August, and they're showing it, and then they're going to have a discussion panel there that answers questions and talks to the audience and so on, and then they're going to show part two on Friday night and do the same thing, have a discussion panel that talks about it. So they're pretty excited. They've been very supportive about the project, and if anybody's in Tahoe Reno, during the 24th and 25th of August, please come check it out if you can.
And I really wish I could have been there with you, but unfortunately my grandson's getting married, and I have to be there. Anyway, Chris, let's get a little bit out of the background. We've been talking about this conflict between really these two worldviews. One is the Christian, the other is the occult. And, of course, this has been really the basis of so many of the struggles going on in America over a period of many years. Of course, today, whereas originally the Christianity was the dominant force in America, today it is really the occult. Would you agree with that?
Well, today, yeah, it certainly seems that way. You know, the question that we talked about in the last hour that we pose is, you know, if America really was a Christian nation from its beginning, then why are our national icons and emblems and the things that represent our nation, why do they all come out of the Babylonian Egyptian mystery religion?
And that's because those forces were here when America was created. All right, Chris, let you pick it up there. You asked the question, is why were there so many of the things? I think one of the most interesting things that I've learned recently is the influence of astrology on our nation's capital. I mean, there are people who will tell you, of course, you know, this is a Christian nation. You can take tours of Washington, D.C., to all the Christian paintings and engravings and statues, but they never take you to the places where they show the zodiacs, and there are something like 23 different zodiacs in Washington, D.C. There are over 1,000 different figures that come from the zodiac figures, these mystical figures that go with that. What are they doing in Washington, D.C.? At the National Academy of Science and on the roofs of the Dirksen Building and every floor, and certainly on the Library of Congress and the U.S. Post Office, and 23 zodiacs in our nation's capital. Why is it that every building in Washington, D.C. has a Masonic plaque on it, and the Masons actually laid the cornerstones for almost all those buildings, including our Capitol and the White House, and we're ever going back to the 1700s. I mean, the influence of Masonry here from the very, it's always been here from the beginning, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning. In fact, it was, I don't know if it was initially, you know, Masonry, as modern Masonry, didn't officially begin, or so they would tell you, until 1717, when the Grand Lodge in England was formed. But of course, Masonry had existed beforehand as a secret society, and part of the controversy when it kind of made itself public or official, as it were, was that part of being a secret society was you were so secret nobody was supposed to know you existed, which makes it very difficult to trace Masonic history. But yeah, they came over with the Rosicrucian movement. That kind of Masonry is said to have grown out of the Rosicrucian movement. And so a lot of those same esoteric, ancient mystery, wisdom, symbols and teachings and so on are found right inside Freemasonry. In fact, the 18th degree in Scottish Rite Masonry is called I think it's the Order of the Rose and Cross. It's the Rosicrucian degree. They also have a Knight Templar degree. And today, of course, modern Masons try to distance themselves. They'll say, well, we don't really have anything to do with the Rosicrucians or with the Knights Templar, but the symbolism is painfully obvious in Scottish Rite Masonry.
And I think it's one only really has to read the writings of Albert Pike, and of course they'll try to disavow Albert Pike, and yet, of course, if you go up on the Internet, you'll find Albert Pike permeates every aspect of Masonry, and of course his bones are interred at the House of the Temple in Washington, D.C., and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, what is this really all about? Well, there have been the ancient mystery religions since the beginning of recorded time. And there's one quotation, really, at the beginning of the chapter in Albert Pike's book, where you're going to become a 32nd degree Mason, the highest degree of Masonry you can earn. Now, of course, there's a 33rd degree, which is above that, and above that there are all sorts of other mystical degrees, as you're really beginning into the esoteric arts, but most Masons don't even know they're there. But Albert Pike writes this: the occult science of the ancient magi was concealed under the shadows of the ancient mysteries. Let me repeat that. The occult science of the ancient magi was concealed under the shadows of the ancient mysteries. It was imperfectly revealed, or rather disfigured, by the Gnostics. It is guessed at under the obscurities that cover the pretended crimes of the Templars. And it is found enveloped in enigmas that seemed impenetrable in the rites of the highest Masonry. What is it, the rites of highest Masonry? It's all about the ancient mysteries of the ancient mystery religions, the secrets that have been passed down through the ages by the sages and by the elect of these secret societies. And that is what Masonry is about. And you say that probably 98% and 99% of Masons have no idea what it's really all about. Wouldn't you agree with that? Don't you think most Masons are really totally ignorant of what this is really about?
Yeah. In fact, you know, I've in doing the research on Volume 2, I've had the opportunity to interview a number of Masons, some in person, and a number of them over the phone. And if you talk to five different Masons and you ask them a few basic questions about Freemasonry, you will easily get five different answers, depending on who you're talking to. And what I think Masons are trying to do today, what they've been trying to do for a number of years now, is to try and clean up their image in the sight of the American people. They know that, you know, shortwave radio, the internet, and, you know, many books and certain films and so on, you know, have exposed them as the secret order with a hidden agenda, and they really don't like that presentation of themselves. And so they're engaging in Masonic apologetics, as it were. And there's a number of books out there. Like, there's like The Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry or Freemasonry for Dummies. And they kind of add a twist of humor to it all. And then they write about, you know, and they actually tackle up front. They tackle a lot of the conspiracy theories about Masonry and talk about them and try to rationalize them and so on. To diffuse all of the conspiracy talk that's gone on. And as you made mention of it, you've got the History Channel and these other groups that are coming out now with these documentaries that deal with Freemasonry. And, of course, the History Channel just breaks out a bucket of white paint and they try to whitewash the whole thing and just, you know, say, well, Albert, you know, they'll laugh off the idea that Albert Pike was a Luciferian. They'll laugh off, you know, the symbolism of a pentagram in Washington, D.C., and things like this, and make it seem like it's all very silly. But I think the reason that they're doing it is because they know the kind of damage that has happened to them in the past. One of the things we talk about in Secret Mysteries is the Captain William Morgan affair. And this is just one of the most devastating things that has ever happened, probably the most devastating thing that ever happened to American Masonry. For those who don't know, William Morgan exposed Masonry by publishing the first three degrees. He was kidnapped by Masons. He was killed. Afterwards, the American people tried to prosecute the Masons that did it, found out they couldn't prosecute him. Why? Because there were Masons at high positions of power in as judges, as sheriffs, in the courts, and so on. And the American people learned very quickly that their country, that the authority in their country had been hijacked by this secret society. So they formed the Anti-Mason Party. And to make a long story short, Masonry lost about 80% of its members around the country. And it almost dried up completely overnight once people found out what was going on and what was happening behind closed doors in this secret society and what they were up to. And so I think Masonry remembers this. They know that if the American people find out too much and they get mad about it, that it can have a devastating impact on them. And I think they are trying to take some of the heat off themselves. I think they're trying to diffuse a lot of these conspiracy theories and so on that have been pretty devastating to their membership in recent years.
Well, did any of the people tell you, we're not Satanists, or we don't worship Satan? Did they ever volunteer that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they laugh it off. And, you know, I interviewed one Mason who said that Satan, that the whole concept of Satan, and this is one of their arguments, that this was something invented by Christianity. Okay? And it's, that the idea of Satan was a very Christian teaching. And it was this character that was made up by the Christians during the Middle Ages with, you know, horns and claws and this whole kind of thing, but that it really doesn't have any basis in history, that it's, you know, that the idea of somebody being a Satanist or whatever is just something that's taught in the churches but doesn't have anything to do with Masonry.
Well, then what do they do, of course, with a quotation from Mike, from Albert Pike on page 321, where he says that Lucifer, the light-bearer, strange and mysterious name to give to the spirit of darkness, Lucifer, the son of the morning. Is it he who bears the light and who with his splendor intolerable, blinds feeble, sensual, and selfish souls? Doubt it not, for traditions are full of divine revelations and inspirations. How do they explain away that?
Well, in the History Channel documentary, they present that quote, but then the Masons show up and they say, well, actually, the anti-Masons take that out of context, right? And that when Pike mentions Lucifer, he's not talking about Satan. Okay, Satan is the Christian invention, but Lucifer is simply the light bearer. He's the one who brings enlightenment to people who are seeking knowledge. And that it's this philosophic concept of enlightenment that Pike is really referring to. Now, the problem with that argument is that that quote about Lucifer in Morals and Dogma actually comes, it's one that Pike plagiarized from Eliphas Levi, okay, who was a 19th century French occultist. And if you read Levi's writings, which are quoted by people like Madame Blavatsky extensively, and Pike quotes very, very heavily from Levi, even though he never gives him credit, Levi very definitely believed that, you know, the God of the Bible was really an evil God, okay, and that Satan and Lucifer, and he does equate Satan and Lucifer as being one and the same, that Lucifer was the true God. Lucifer was the good God, and that really the horns and claws belong on the God of the Bible. Okay, so this upside-down theology, which Pike details in page 563 through page 567 of Morals and Dogma, is basically a copy of what he learned from Eliphas Levi.
And that's where he talks about the Prince of Darkness created Adam.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole idea is the Prince of Darkness created Adam and, of course, then told him not to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then the angel of light came and told them to go ahead and eat of the fruit of the knowledge of the tree of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and set him free. In other words, once, of course, you'd eaten the forbidden fruit, now you could be free. Well, of course, what the Prince of Darkness is the God we worship, and the angel of light is the serpent Lucifer. So, when you understand, they turn everything upside down. What do they do with Mandy P. Hall's revelation in his book, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry? And for our listeners who don't know, Manly P. Hall, when he died, the Scottish Rite magazine referred to him as probably the Masonry's greatest philosopher. But Pike wrote this in The Lost Keys of Freemasonry: when the Mason learns the key to the warrior on the block is the proper application of the dynamo of living power, he has learned the mystery of his craft. The seething energies of Lucifer are in his hands. Did you ask any of them about that?
Oh yeah. In fact, what they say, their argument on Hall, is that most Masons don't know who Hall is. And then, of course, you remind them that the Scottish Rite Journal declared that Hall was often referred to as Masonry's greatest philosopher. Now, I actually had a Mason who is the current managing editor for the Scottish Rite Journal admitted that yes, this, you know, that is a quote that is there. But his argument was that was a memoriam, okay, of Manly Hall after he died, and that memoriams are usually laudatory and they're generous and so on, but that doesn't really reflect who Hall was, that he was never really known as Masonry's greatest philosopher.
In other words, we said he was Masonry's greatest philosopher, but he really wasn't what we said he was.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
And, of course, the thing is that people cannot come out and admit publicly that they worship Lucifer. I mean, what person is going to do that? I mean, this is why Jacques de Molay was burned at the stake back in the 1300s, because he was a Luciferian, and because the whole Templar movement had tapped into this knowledge of the ancient mystery religions. And they were all into Luciferianism and homosexuality and all sorts of anything to desecrate the message of the Bible. And so Jacques de Molay was burned at the stake. Now, what a Mason today who really knows, I don't think most Masons have any idea what this is about, but they believe that there are two gods. There's a good God and a bad God. And the God we worship is the bad God, and the God they worship is the good God. And you will find this theme running through all of Albert Pike's writings about the supreme being and then the inferior being who created the heaven and the earth. That's the God we worship. Until you understand that there are two gods and they worship the other God, nothing really makes sense. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, no, I would totally agree. That's entirely Pike's philosophy and his theology, and he sets it down very clearly in Morals and Dogma.
And of course, this is really Gnosticism. And until people know the Gnostic beliefs and the understanding of Eitelboth and who he was and Sophia, and the Gnostics were a very, very powerful force within the first century, second, third century Christianity, and they're alive and well in America today. Well, Chris, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, it's interesting that you mention Gnosticism, because that's, according to some, that's really the significance of the Masonic letter G. A lot of Masons will say it stands for geometry, or it stands for God, and so on. Albert Mackey, in his Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, alludes to the idea that it stands for Gnosticism. Then you have other writers who argue that Gnosticism is really the mother of Freemasonry. And, of course, looking at the belief, especially the writings of Albert Pike and his influence, that name Ialdabaoth that you referred to, is said to be the ancient Gnostic name for God. That was how they, you know, it was a name that they had given to God. But it was the God who created the material world, and they believed that that God was an evil God. And that tradition and belief, so on, you know, has been handed down through the centuries and was picked up not only by guys like Eliphas Levi, Albert Pike, but then you find Madame H.P. Blavatsky in her Theosophical movement. She adopts exactly that philosophy. And even though he was a lot darker than the others, I mean, a lot more forward about being dark and evil, Aleister Crowley likewise picked up the same philosophy. He took it to a much greater extreme, but he has all the same roots. In fact, he believed he was the reincarnation of Eliphas Levi. So you find a lot of common influences in this group, even though they all didn't necessarily interact with one another. But Gnosticism, yeah. Gnosticism, for those who don't know, is what the early church, you know, if you read John's epistles, you read 1 John, and you're talking, and John is talking about how there are many antichrists gone out into the world, okay, and those who are denying the Father and the Son, and so on. It's, you know, most every Bible scholar that I've ever read or, you know, heard a teaching from believes that John, in his letters, is writing against the early Gnostic movement that had all of these teachings about Jesus that were not really about the Jesus of the Bible. It was another Jesus that that they were preaching and talking about. And Paul even warns against this in one of his letters to the Corinthians. He talks about, you know, I fear lest as the serpent beguiled Eve with his craftiness, he says, that your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity of devotion to Christ. For if he that cometh preaches another Jesus, and so he's warning them about those who come preaching another Jesus, and that's exactly what Gnosticism did. In a nutshell, Gnosticism was the precursor to what would later become the Rosicrucian movement. And it was this combining of the ancient mystery religions, okay, that came out of Egypt and so on, and they hijacked elements of Christianity and combined them. And then the Gnostics were showing up, and they were declaring themselves to be the true Christians, but they still wanted to take part in their sex rituals and, you know, their pagan practices and so on. And they claimed that they didn't really need to obey any commandments from, you know, the Bible and from the Scripture and so on. And some believe that this is why John writes, you know, he who says, I know God, and does not keep his commands, is a liar and the truth is not in him. And we find that with neo-Gnostics today. There, you know, as the Bible says, there would be scoffers in the last days walking after their own lust.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Chris Pinto. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Chris Pinto, and we're talking really about the Gnostic religion, which is really the foundation of so much of modern-day Masonry, although it goes back into the ancient mystery religions and all the beliefs of the Hermetic beliefs and the beliefs of the Eleusians and the Dionysians and Orpheus, who are all mystical gods, that really come from ancient Greek theology and ancient Roman theology or mythology. But you have to understand that Masonry today is really a resurgence of Gnosticism. It's very, very straightforward if you understand what the Gnostics believe, and then you read Albert Pike's writings. Now, we have to ask, Chris, why would intelligent people believe this sort of foolishness? I mean, certainly Albert Pike talks about how if you embrace this, you'll constitute the equilibrium of the universe, and become the ruler over the masters of this world. Do they really expect that they're going to get power by embracing this philosophy, this other God?
Well, that's a great question, Dr. Stan. I go to the book of Revelation, chapters 17 through 19, and you read about the kings of the earth who are gathered together to make war against Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God. You know, the Bible talks about the 10 kings that will rule the world, and it says that these shall make war against the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. But nevertheless, they're making war against Jesus himself. And I believe that's a, you know, that is a picture of where all of these things are headed. Because you find in these secret orders, you find a very subversive, anti-Christ spirit that definitely diminishes the person and character of Jesus, hates Jesus, really writes very despicable and hateful things against the God of the Bible, and glorifies Lucifer, and actually is teaching in a nutshell that Lucifer is the true God, and that ultimately, I mean, if you study different occult writings and so on, you can piece together that these guys actually believe that Lucifer will win in the end, that he's going to defeat Christ at Armageddon, and then, you know, ascend into heaven, defeat God the Father on his throne, and then go off and reign in the universe for all eternity, supposedly. And this is contained in the nuances and a lot of their teachings and so on. In fact, Pastor Joe, in one of his videos, he talks about L. Ron Hubbard, you know, who founded Scientology. And Hubbard had written a letter before he died describing the purpose of Scientology. And if you study Scientology, all these same influences are there, okay? And Hubbard wrote this letter where he talks about the true purpose of Scientology. And he's talking about the second coming of Christ mentioned in the book of Revelation. And he says the purpose of Scientology is not to stop or to deny this second coming, but to derail it, to somehow or other try to keep it from happening. You know, not to pretend that it won't happen, but to blow it off course, to somehow or other change the destiny of the world by basically defeating Jesus at his return. And there really are people who believe that this is possible. And I think that these Gnostic teachings and these subversive teachings that are happening through the secret societies that are being taught all of this antichrist doctrine, that this is ultimately what's going to embolden these kings of the earth to march out at Armageddon and think that they have any kind of a chance against Christ himself.
But, of course, the thing is that L. Ron Hubbard considered himself a prototype of Satan. He said he was going to come again after his death. You know, and, of course, the people who are into Scientology get great wealth and great prosperity in this world. In fact, Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. We have other actors, you know, making millions, tens of millions of dollars into Scientology. You get into Scientology, you get into these occult religions, there's tremendous advantage and tremendous prosperity there for you, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think John Travolta is likewise involved in Scientology. And, you know, I don't necessarily think the world is quite there yet. I don't think everybody's ready to march out against Jesus at Armageddon, but it certainly seems that the teaching and the theology, I mean, if you watch, you just watch regular television long enough, just click on three or four different TV shows, I'm just amazed whenever I click around just to see what's going on. All of the anti-God and anti-Christ statements and jokes and things like that are just thrown back and forth in television today, just in our entertainment industry.
But I think there is a conspiracy against Jesus Christ, there's a conspiracy against God, and that's what this conspiracy is really all about. We'll be right back in just a moment with Chris Pinto. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Chris Pinto, and Chris is up visiting us for a couple of days, and we're talking about certainly what's going on behind the scenes. Chris was just talking about this film of Joe Simmel's. For those of you who have not yet seen the video, the Da Vinci Con, that you'll actually see the film clip in that, and I think this was L. Ron Hubbard's son. Tell us about what his father had said about being an agent of Satan or being Satan, and how he was going to die, but he was going to come back again. And this whole effort to destroy Christianity, defeat Christianity, people don't understand what's going on. In fact, everything was done to suppress that information. There was a big lawsuit over whether that letter should ever be made public, and the judge decreed that it could be made public. But I dare say Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the pundits on the media have never told the average American what Scientology is really all about. That L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, where they got their supernatural power from.
Yeah, Scientology is, the most staggering thing about Scientology that Pastor Joe brings out, and at least in the Rock video, I think it might be in the new video as well.
It is, right.
Is where he talks about where L. Ron Hubbard's son actually writes about his father and his father's relationship and his admiration of Aleister Crowley, who was a Satanist, very openly a Satanist, and yet I hear Hubbard is talking about, you know, his admiration for this man and following his teachings and so on. And Hubbard was involved in various occult ceremonies with Jack Parsons, who was the founder of JPL and into, you know, rocket science and this kind of thing. And they spent years developing occult rituals, trying to bring forth a moon child. I mean, really dark, evil, satanic stuff that Hubbard was into. And this guy is the founder of this movement that has a lot of weight and popularity and momentum in Hollywood, in New York. I mean, when we were in New York a few months ago with a film festival there, we went by and saw the Scientology building. And, they have these really, you know, bright-eyed, intelligent young people that are there manning the bookstore, and they are more than happy to pop up and talk to you about Dianetics and Scientology and L. Ron and all this kind of stuff, and it's pretty disturbing how many people are involved with a movement like this who have no idea what's behind it and what it's all about.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris was just talking about Scientology, L. Ron Howard. L. Ron Howard, of course, was a great admirer of Aleister Crowley, who was an avowed Satanist, and, of course, Howard even talked about how he was going to die but going to come back again, and about this conspiracy against Christianity. One of the callers just wanted to know, what's the supernatural power that people will gain by getting involved with these things? Is it money or is it something else?
Well, I think it's, there's a Jeremiah Films video on Satanism and talks about the rise of Satanism in the West. And they're, at one point they're interviewing this guy who is like a warlock. He's the high priest of some satanic movement, and he's very open about it. And he talks about the purpose of witchcraft. And he says the purpose of witchcraft or black magic is this. He says, it's getting what you want. You get what you want. Whatever you want, that's the purpose of witchcraft. And, Aleister Crowley's motto was, you know, do what thou wilt, shall be the whole of the law. And so, whatever it is that a person wants, whether it's money, whether it's fame, whether it's fortune, whether it's, you know, some opportunity, whatever it is, that's what Satan and his minions, his demons, offer to someone. And this is something that, you know, we find it in the Bible. It's when Jesus is tempted by Satan in the wilderness, and he's, you know, shows him in a moment in time, he shows him all the glories of the world and so on, and he says, if you will bow down and worship me, all these things will be thine. And, of course, Pastor Joe shows in the Rock video how all of these different rock musicians, one after another, are singing about the deal they made with the devil for fame and fortune. This is a very real thing. And there are stories, if you read some of Dave Hunt's books, like Occult Invasion, there are stories about people who have been, you know, in with occult powers. They were taught these different occult methods, and they use them to influence people and gain opportunities for themselves and so on. And then they get very curious, where do these powers come from? And when they seek it out, there's one story of a guy who sought the answer to this question, and he came to somebody who knew about it, who was a Christian, and the guy told him, well, you know, these are the powers of Satan. And he acknowledged that it was the power of Satan. He said, you know, I was afraid of that. But then he said he couldn't give it up because he would lose his power. And so that seems to be, you know, the core desire. People want power, whatever it is, you know, power to get what you want. And, you know, the example that we have of Jesus in the Bible, you know, when Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane, he prays, you know, Father, not as I will, but as you will. You know, Jesus says, if a man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And that's the way of Christianity, and that's the difference between the way of Christianity and the way that Lucifer or Satan and this whole world system has to offer.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting how you will find various things out just sort of by chance. I had one evening I was talking about the influence of Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great and how they'd all been really involved with this occult, ancient mystery religions. And one of my listeners, who was in Canada at the time, wrote back and said, you know, I listened to you, and I get so angry because I was an expert on that, and I took a course in college, and I thought you were entirely crazy until I looked at a book on my library shelf. And he gave me a reference to a book, one of the most important books in my library. It's called Plutarch, The Age of Alexander. Well, you remember Plutarch was lived about 100 A.D., about 100 years after Christ was born. And he's writing about Alexander the Great, who had lived, I think Alexander died in 323 B.C. But and this is Plutarch's story of Alexander. Now remember, Plutarch was deeply involved in the ancient mysteries. And he tells about how Aristotle had trained Alexander in this mystery religions. And then Aristotle had written a book about the mystery religions. And Alexander is furious with him, and he writes to Aristotle, and he said, Aristotle, you have not done well. I mean, you've written a book about the mystery religions, and that's going to allow other people to understand what you've taught me in private. And, you know, I would far rather be able to control other people with my knowledge than with my power. And, of course, then it goes on to say that Aristotle had written back and said, Alexander, you don't have anything to worry about. I mean, you can read all the books you want to about the mysteries, but until you've been personally instructed in this, no one will understand. And here it is, here we're reading a book that was written 100 years after Christ was born, about Alexander the Great and the mysteries which he'd been schooled in that had given him the ability to accomplish what he did. And with a small army of about 36,000 Macedonians, he literally conquered the known world at that time. But he was tapping into this mysterious secret force, and of course Lucifer rewards those who give their lives to him. And he died at a very young age. He died a year before his teacher Aristotle did, as a matter of fact. An amazing story, and most people have never heard it. We have the book, Plutarch, The Age of Alexander.
Yeah, there are, you know, many such stories of people, you know, I think in the ancient world and in the modern world, coming in contact with these, with supernatural, you know, powers to obtain, you know, whether it's power, whether it's opportunity. In the modern world, science has been the big thing. This is where the Rosicrucians play an important role, and where modern science plays a very important role, because modern science is, in many ways, while it seems so technical and so, you know, sobering and so separate supposedly from religious ideology, it is, in many cases, it's anything but. You know, we talked about Thomas Edison being part of the Theosophical Society. He's probably the greatest inventor of the 20th century, at least. One of the greatest inventors of all time. Then you get into guys like Chester Carlson, who developed the Xerox photocopying process, and he admitted that he had obtained the idea for the Xerox machine from the spirit realm. You get into guys like Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. Carl Jung, especially, you know, one of the founders of modern psychology and the whole idea of the subconscious mind that modern psychology is based on. That's supposedly, you know, very scientific, and they have all of these psychological explanations to explain away demon possession, which supposedly, you know, was the superstition of the ancient world, but now we know better. And yet Carl Jung is getting his information, and he's communing with a spirit that he called Philemon. Okay? Jung himself was involved with the spirit realm, and Sigmund Freud, toward the end of his life, admitted that while he did not believe in the paranormal throughout his career, toward the end of his life, he said it was inescapable, that this was something that really did exist. So it's just fascinating the impact that the supernatural realm has had upon our present reality.
I think one of the significant things in Pastor Joe Schimmel's latest DVD called The Da Vinci Con, and I really recommend this. This is excellent. But he quotes this one Hollywood scriptwriter who is really very, very well known as saying that, you know, he really wasn't doing too well until he went into the spirit realm and he contacted a demon who would channel things to him, and then he would write them out, and he became one of the leading scriptwriters in Hollywood, and I dare say that many of our listeners have seen many of his films and had no idea who really wrote the script. If you read the writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard, her book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, she admits it was a channel to her. Alice Bailey's books were channeled to her. Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky, her books were channeled to her by demonic spirits. And that's how you get the message, and that's how you get to be famous, but, of course, at the cost of your eternal soul.
Yeah, and, you know, when you get into characters like Alice Bailey, it becomes very sobering when you see the influence of Bailey, especially over people like Robert Mueller, the former Assistant Secretary General at the United Nations, and these schools, these Robert Mueller schools that are being set up in different parts of the country and I think in different parts of the world. But the school curriculum that they have openly admits that it is based on the teachings and the writings of Alice Bailey, who channeled the spirit Jual Kul, you know, the so-called Tibetan master, this demonic spirit. And here you've got somebody who's influenced, you know, not only these schools, but also the founder of these schools, a guy who's, you know, the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations at some point. And, I mean, last month, you remember Benjamin Krem?
Oh, yes, uh-huh, yes.
Okay, Benjamin Krem, who back in 1982 took out full-page ads in newspapers around the world and claimed that the Christ is here, and then held a press conference and told everybody that Christ, who he calls the Maitreya, is in the world and is ready to appear and all this other kind of stuff. Benjamin Krem last month spoke to a group at the United Nations. It's one of the NGO groups, but he's there speaking. He's invited to come and speak in some great hall to a bunch of people that are directly affiliated with the UN. So the influence of this movement, even though it's operating a lot of times in the undercurrent and in the underground of world government and so on, is very much at work in the world today.
And, of course, their major thrust is world government. And I take their Share magazine, I get the publications of Benjamin Krem. And everything gets around to world government, and that's exactly the thrust of the American government today. In fact, that's why we go from war to war to war, to bring about world government. And I fear that out of the coming world war, and I think it's only a matter of time before we are deeply involved with a major war in the Middle East, will come such suffering and horror that eventually the people will say, we'll do anything so we don't have to live like this. We want peace. and they'll give up their freedom and their national sovereignty and will merge into this New World Order and without the New World Religion, because behind this whole move for a world government is a spiritual force for a destruction of Christianity and this new religion that will worship the other God.
And that's what's happening in the world even now. Very much so. It's very interesting to watch what's happening with this, with the conflict in Iraq, and now all the stuff that's going on with Israel and Hezbollah, and all of this conflict in the Middle East. I can't help but be reminded of something that I remember researching a number of years ago, and that is this this outline that was that is so often attributed to Albert Pike and Giuseppe Mazzini. For a plan for three world wars. You remember this, Dr. Stan?
Oh, yes, I do, but go ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, just you know, this was something that we talked about with William Still in Megiddo, part one, probably about four and a half years ago. And of course, this conflict in the Middle East has been going on for a while. But this plan that was supposedly set down in a letter between Pike and Mazzini back in 1871, you can find documentation for it, even though the original letter does not exist. There is documentation of the letter going back to at least the 1950s, and some even say the 1920s, to a book written by a Catholic cardinal on Freemasonry called, I think it was called The Secrets of Masonry Revealed, or something, by the Cardinal of Chile in about 1926, I think it was, but writing about this letter and this plan for three world wars, and the third world war, of course, erupting between Israel and her Arab neighbors. And while there's obviously a lot of people who have been skeptical about this this letter and the idea of this plan, it's just amazing what's unfolding in the world right now and how it seems to fit in with this, you know, plan that's been written about for years. You know, for decades now, people have been talking about this.
And I think it's really such an incredible story. And if you look and see what's happening, how did we get into the mess we are in the Middle East? And why, of course, are we, you know, in a situation where very, very soon we may well be at war with Iran and with Syria? Have we lost enough boys over there? Are the people in Iraq and Afghanistan better off? Are we really fighting terrorism, or are we fomenting terrorism? So I think there are a lot of questions about what's going on. But the real thing is there a spiritual force behind this? Is there almost like a cosmic script which has already been written, and we're simply following this blindly? Many of our leaders not even realizing what they're doing. Others, of course, having given themselves over to the dark side and carrying out this cosmic plan, which has been really there for really probably thousands of years, bringing us into this final great conflict of history.
Well, it's certainly all coming together, you know, according to Bible prophecy. I mean, it's just amazing watching what's happening in the Middle East, you know, and then going into, you know, places like Zechariah, you know, chapters 12 through 14, and reading it, you know, all that God says would be happening with Jerusalem, how Jerusalem would be a cup of trembling, how it would be a burdensome stone. How the governors of Judah, the Jews, would be like a hearth of fire, and they would be devouring the peoples round about them, which they're doing right now as they're, you know, in warfare against all of these terrorists that are surrounding them, and how it's all eventually going to come to a head, this rise of anti-Semitism throughout the world. I've gotten a couple of secular documentaries recently and watched them. One of them is called The Longest Hatred, and it is it's like a PBS documentary done a number of years ago that documents anti-Semitism not only in America but throughout the world, and shows how here in recent history how this is a movement that is growing throughout Europe, and they're showing all these little towns and little places where these people have this hatred against the Jewish people, and they're blaming the Jews for everything, and they want to get rid of these Jews, and why can't we just get them out of here, and all this other kind of thing. And it's really, really staggering to see it happen. Then there's another documentary done by HBO, and it's called called The Protocols of Zion. And it's done by, again, secular Jewish people who are following this whole thing on the Protocols of Zion and how it's blamed, a Jewish plan to take over the world, and they're exploring anti-Semitism throughout America. And it's just staggering how many people have this, at times, senseless hatred of the Jewish people. And of course, we believe...
It is growing, Chris. We get the same sort of response. There's hardly a week goes by that I don't get one or two letters telling me that all the problems of the world, of course, are the problem of the Jews. It's not the Jews who are behind this. It's the satanic conspiracy that we're talking about. These people who work at another god or worship another god. We'll be right back in just a minute to wrap up the program. Well, why don't you go right ahead and finish the program there? We've got 3 minutes for you to finish it up.
Well, you know, all of this stuff for me, all of this kind of research, you know, whether it's about the New Atlantis, whether it's anti-Semitism happening in the world or all of this conflict in the Middle East, ultimately, while a lot of this can be disparaging, I have to lift my eyes to heaven and just thank the Lord because His Word is true. You know, God's prophecies are true and they are coming to pass in the world right now. Revelation 19:10 says that the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And for me as a Christian, that's where all of this is pointing to. And we discuss it in our documentaries in a variety of ways. We try to give a lot of historical information, try to give some exhortations, and, you know, to look to people who have expert knowledge and who have been studying this stuff for decades and decades. And to come up with some interesting details to inspire people to, you know, conduct an investigation on their own and to start looking into these things. And as I often say on these issues, I have no fear that somebody's going to go and start investigating these things and then find out that we're wrong. If anything, they're going to uncover, you know, so many, you know, cans of worms and, you know, different things that they'll realize that we're just scratching the surface because there's so much information out there that supports and confirms what's happening in the world and how all of these things are, you know, marching toward this ultimate climax. And you and I would agree, Dr. Stan, that climax is biblical. It's apocalyptic. It's all that God has spoken by the mouth of all His holy prophets since the age began. And it all points to the second coming of His Son, Jesus Christ. And so I would encourage people, if you don't know the Lord, if you don't know Jesus, I would just hope you're not out there listening to these things and just thinking, wow, this is a lot of interesting information. But you'll recognize that these things are happening because the reason this calamity comes upon the world is because it's God's judgment upon a sinful world. But God sent His Son to die for your sins, whoever you are. And if you'll reach out and you'll trust Him and confess that you're a sinner and receive Him into your heart, you can be reconciled to God. You can be saved from the fires of hell and be translated into the kingdom of His dear Son and come to salvation and life eternal. And that's what our work is really about.
It really is. And, of course, the longer I live, the more convinced I am that God does rule in the affairs of men. And, of course, your work and my work is try to point people in the right direction. People are fascinated by secret societies, but until you understand what it's about, why, of course, you can't be effective.
Amen.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, of course, our guest this evening has been Chris Pitto, who's been good enough to be with us for 2 hours, and we'll be doing some work with him tomorrow. But I think what Chris had just said is that really everything he does, everything that I do, is to try to point people to the spiritual forces working behind the scenes. And once you begin to understand what is really behind the geopolitical events that we see, what is behind these ancient mystery religions, you will point you to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, because there's nothing I'm going to do, that you're going to do, that Chris is going to do, that change the events that have already been foreshadowed and which are being planned today. But What we can do is offer you the greatest gift of all time, and that is the opportunity to establish a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. And as Chris has been said so clearly, you know, we hope that you'll look into what we're saying, what he's saying, get his videos, listen to our programs, and then check out the facts. And I hope that you'll come to the same conclusion I did 44 years ago when I first began to realize there was a conspiracy out there. I came to the realization it was a conspiracy against God, and nothing has changed. Chris Pinto, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a fascinating 2 hours.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
Good night. You get a good night's sleep. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, there is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy against God. When you understand that, everything begins to make sense. Well, this is the time when I need to remind you, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. If you believe in what we're doing, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to get some of the videos we were talking about this evening, the Da Vinci Con, that's almost 3 hours from Joe Schimmel, and I will tell you, it is one of the most gripping things you'll ever see, and it gets into L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology. It gets into so many of the films that you've seen, this major script writer in Hollywood, who's his scripts are dictated to him by a demonic being. By a demonic being. He admits that. But, of course, you're not supposed to understand that there is another dimension. People tap into another dimension, and they get great fame and great power and great wealth, but, of course, at the expense of their eternal souls. And so understand it's there and avoid it like the plague, because God tells us to avoid astrology and seers and diviners and fortune tellers and mediums and all of these things. Understand there's another dimension. But, of course, that's not the dimension we want to be dealing with. We want to have a personal relationship with our Lord. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get Joe Schimmel's They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of that. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get his Secret Mysteries, Chris Pinto's Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and his Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2. And when you've watched all of those, of course, you will have tremendous knowledge of everything we're talking about. Chris is an excellent teacher. He's an excellent filmmaker. And here, there were some 1,700 entries into the New York Film Festival and his film, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, got first place. I mean, that is an amazing tribute to him and to David Bay, who worked with him to help finance his venture. And I'm indebted to David and to Chris for giving us this excellent weapon, a weapon that you can utilize to touch people's souls. And, of course, remember we mentioned a little earlier that one of my secretary her son had showed one of his young friends, the high school student, they sold their souls for rock and roll, and this boy had given his life to the Lord as a direct result of that. We have the weapons. You need to help us get the truth out. If you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, of course, we'd be glad to send you one. I would suggest the May 2006 newsletter on immigration, because we will tell you who's behind the illegal immigration movement. We will tell you the true meaning of the logo of the Trilateral Commission. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization and the souls of men. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, or Monday, may the Lord be with you.
question.